Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Regis Resources Limited Investor and Analyst Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key, followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. On the call today, we have Jim Beyer, Managing Director, Stuart Gawler, Chief Operating Officer, and John Lattow, Chief Financial Officer. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jim Beyer. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ashley, and thanks everyone for joining us for the talk-through on the Regis Resources June 2020 quarterly update. Look, I note the quarterly report was released earlier today, and I'll make occasional reference to some of the diagrams, so it wouldn't hurt if you've got it handy. Firstly, onto safety. I'm very pleased to report our 12-month moving average lost time injury frequency rate has seen a 20% decline over the last quarter as we dropped to  3.6. This is a great trend, and we will continue to lift the focus on leadership and its role in improving safety across our business. While on safety, I'd like to touch on COVID-19. Consistent with our values, Regis sees the well-being of our employees, contractors, and local communities continuing to be a priority in these challenging times. The company has continued with a range of measures across its business, consistent with the advice from state and federal health authorities, and these measures have helped ensure the health and welfare of our employees and our respective communities, including the following actions which we've been undertaking: health checks prior to check-in for travel to site, ongoing social distancing in accordance with the rules, ongoing auditing and verification, mental health support for both employees and our families, maintenance of adequate inventories with major contractors and suppliers, and also donations and support in kind to a number of local charities and community support initiatives. We also joined the FIFO Detect Research Program in its inception, which is supported by resource companies and helps to identify the potential asymptomatic cases of COVID within the FIFO workforce. Via this program, we're able to test all people going to our operational sites prior to them going. As part of our ongoing risk management, we've also looked at various scenarios with planning to assess the possible financial outcomes that could result from various scenarios of the COVID virus contraction, either through our people or across our site. This process, in turn, assists in developing tactics to mitigate possible detrimental impacts on the company. This work highlights the company's strong position with multiple production sites, separate camps, existing stockpiles, significant cash reserves, and a debt-free balance sheet and hedges that have the flexibility in their delivery schedules. All of these highlight the current relatively strong position the company is in to manage this prevailing uncertainty and risks. To date, we've had no confirmed cases of COVID-19, and the impact to operations and the business have been controlled and well managed by the team, albeit with a marginal impact on the costs. On that, COVID-19-related costs have been circa $5 an ounce across the full year. This is basically due to additional medical supplies, travel, logistics costs within the broader ongoing workforce, and also our participation in the FIFO Detect testing. And this is likely to continue in the foreseeable future. And look, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our employees, our contractors, and their families in particular for the hard work and efforts and support that they've been providing during these challenging times. Moving on to the business outcomes, the quarter was a solid performance by the team, with gold production at 87,260 ounces, which was up slightly on the prior quarter. This gave us a full-year production of 352,042 ounces, which is pretty well in the centre of our guidance range, which was 340 to 370 for the year. During this quarter, we sold just over 100,000 ounces for an average price of $2,381 an ounce Aussie. Our cash cost before royalties was a neat $1,000 an ounce, giving a full year of 915. And our all-in sustaining costs for the quarter were $1,358 an ounce, giving a full year of 1,246, which brought us in just above at the very top end of our guidance after adjustments. On the back of this, our operational cash flow was a record $109 million, with subsequent major deductions being $29 million for capitalised mining, $11 million for exploration and feasibility projects, just over $9 on CapEx projects, including $5 for the TSF, for TSF3, $4 on corporate costs, and finally, a healthy $15 million on income tax. This left us with a very solid cash and equivalent increase by $41 million to a total of $209 million. Just quickly touching on our hedges over the period, we continued to work on reducing our hedge book as previously guided. In the June quarter, we lifted our volumes towards the back end into the hedge and delivered just over 19,000 ounces. We're now sitting at around 399,000 or just over 399,000 of hedge, $1,000 worth, 399,000 ounces in our hedge book, down from the start of the financial year when we had 451,000. Over the full year, the average price of gold sold by Regis was $2,200 compared to the average spot price of $2,333. Now what this means is it quantifies the impact of our selling into our hedges for the full year of just around 6% of the potential gross revenue. The rate of delivery into these lowest price contracts will continue to be assessed for adjustment. Any changes to this rate will consider several factors, including prevailing gold price outlooks, internal cash demands, capital expenditure requirements, dividends, and any other changes to the company life of mine production plans. Now, looking in a little more detail at our sites, production at Duketon North, or our Moolart Well mine, was 20,743 ounces during the quarter, a decrease on the March quarter. March was 23,820 ounces. Ore tonnes milled were up, well up on the prior quarter, but this was offset by lower grades. The grade decline was due in part to short-term changes in our ore sequencing because of a change of the surface haulage contractor. We changed over the last few months, and while it's gone relatively smoothly, there was some impacts and we had to adjust our volumes coming from some of the higher grade sources, and that had a short-term impact. This lower production, along with a higher strip ratio in the quarter, were the key drivers for the all-in sustaining cost lifting for the quarter to 1519. Duketon South, that's Garden Well and Rosemont, production was 66,516 ounces in the June quarter, which is up 7% on March. The higher production was due to higher mill throughput across both Garden Well and Rosemont, particularly as the mill issues in the March quarter were now resolved. The higher southern operations all-in sustaining cost of 1519 for the quarter was driven by higher strip ratio of 30%. That was the higher strip ratio, which was 30% higher than the prior quarter, and also the higher underground costs in the early stages of production now that we've declared commercial production. More on that in a minute. Overall, the all-in sustaining cost for the year was $1,246 an ounce, which after adjusting for the impacts of the higher gold price on royalties of $35 an ounce and the cost of COVID, which was circa $5 an ounce, is broadly in line with our guidance that we provided back in the March quarter release. I'd like to turn now to the future and our growth projects. It's great to see Rosemont Underground commence commercial production in June, and going forward we'll see this continue to lift as a key contributor to the rising path to get us to 400,000 from the Duketon operations. Ramp up to full production at the underground continues, and the coming quarter we'll see the commencement of stope ore from the higher grade Rosemont Central Zone, where the expected life of mine grades are circa 20% higher than the south, which is where we're currently producing from. The south currently averages around 2.9 grams a tonne. At Garden Well, the underground story continues to get pieced together and gain momentum. The gold chute currently measures, or our drilling is showing that it's measuring between 4 and 10 metres true width across strike, 80 to 100 metres high, and it dips to the east for about 500 metres and is open at depth. Figure 3 gives you a bit of an indication of that. Drilling has been focused in this past quarter on providing increased confidence allowing us to support the estimation of a maiden underground resource and reserve. Some of the attractive hits for the quarter included 10 metres at 16 grams or just over 16 grams a tonne and 14.6 metres at 5 grams a tonne. Look, also in the quarterly report, you can see in figure 4 how it's, that's one of the conceptual designs for the underground layout that we're looking at, just to give you an idea of where our thinking is and how far we're progressing here. Work on the PFS is now underway and we're expecting this to be finished in the December quarter. At McPhillamys, momentum continues to gather. The assessment phase of the development application is well underway, with the response to submissions expected to be completed by us at the end of August. That's barring any last-minute COVID impacts, but nothing material is expected at this point. After our response to submissions, it gets assessed by the Department of Planning, Industry and Environment. The guidelines given to us is that this would generally anticipate a 3 to 4 month process. From there, it would be referred to the Independent Planning Commission, which has public hearings and then a decision. That, we've been told, could be as quick as 3 months, but obviously that remains to be seen. Look, we recognise and respect the final decision by the government is still to be made, and the process is underway. And while it's underway, it's more than just wishful thinking, though, that a decision on this development application could be made in the first half of next year, first half of 2021 calendar. Should this occur, based on our current plans, we foresee potential for commissioning of the plant to occur in the second half of 2022. But as I noted, this is dependent, highly dependent on the timing of the successful application for approval. Look, stepping back and looking at the bigger picture for Regis, here is when you start to put McPhillamys production potential on top of our targeted 400,000 at the Duketon operation. You can see where we're going, with McPhillamys being circa 170 to 200,000 ounces per annum when it's in full raw. You can understand where our overall potential annual production is headed. Look, I'd now like to turn my comments to our organic growth opportunities in exploration, which will take us beyond this production vision. First to Rosemont Underground, where deep drilling is testing the potential for gold mineralisation at depth. And we have got some more results, which have been quite encouraging. 2.2 metres at just over 8 grams a tonne, down 680 metres downhole, and 3 metres at 8.4 grams a tonne, 571 metres down the hole. This outcome is exciting and seems to support our proposition that Rosemont Underground will continue at depth, certainly below its current planned levels. We're now in the process of diamond drilling the deeper holes underneath the south, the central, and also the main zone, which we haven't been at before this time. Elsewhere at Vanigo, encouraging results are continuing to be found below the pits, and this is keeping us very encouraged on that opportunity. Gloucester as well is building and looks interesting, and as I said before, it could be a bit of a dark horse. We're seeing some pretty impressive results there. 2 metres at 8.9 grams a tonne, 3 metres at 9, 1.8 metres at 105 grams. Now, it's still complex geology. These appear to be flat-lying, although there's still quite a bit of work to do there. So it's still early days on the interpreting front, but all our drill holes are telling us there's definitely something there. So that's certainly an exciting opportunity that's growing. On the broader exploration front, overall activity you can see in Table 2 in the report really shows how much we've been stepping up the physical work of exploration across our leases. Notably, the early stage work, lag and air core, is really taking a step up, although I would answer the question of why did lag sampling drop off in the last quarter. It's simply we had an unsatisfactory safety issues with the service provider, and we had to undergo a change, and that resulted in a bit of a slowdown, and we've now sped back up again on that front. But it was basically a safety related change. A high priority regional target along the Risdon Well trend. Pardon me. It's been tested with air core drilling on 800 metre line spacings and defined an anomalous gold zone over 0.1 gram per tonne over a 5 kilometre strike. Now, this is in a sediment package adjacent to the western margin of the greenstone belt of our ground. But the real highlight in this is the 3 kilometre strike zone where the grade's above 0.5 grams a tonne. So above half a gram a tonne. The prospect area is now known as Beetlejuice, and a campaign for intense infill drilling will be carried out over the next quarter or so to further determine the continuity, thickness and tenor of gold mineralisation along this strike. So we have a 3 kilometre strike where the air core drilling has hit anomalies greater than half a gram a tonne. Look, I think that's pretty good. For now, we don't have a 1 million ounce plus deposit, but the groundwork is being done to hopefully get us there. Watch this space. On guidance, coming up to guidance for this current financial year, FY21, we're expecting a strong year of growth with the operations as production continues to lift in line with our targeted growth profile. FY21, gold production will step up. Our range is 355 to 380,000 ounces for the year. Our C1 cash costs, including royalty, is $1,030 to $1,091 an ounce. Our all-in sustaining costs, which also include royalties, is $1,230 to $1,300 an ounce, fairly consistent. Growth capital is down a bit on this year at a range of $50 to $60 million. Exploration is still holding. We'll keep that chugging along at around $35 million. And McPhillamys, we're anticipating a $15 million spend there, which is a step up as we start to engage in more activity and we get closer to the pulling the trigger. I would note that that's a minimum of $15 million. We will be assessing progress through this approvals process once the RTS is submitted, and we may undertake some additional expenditure on early long lead items and other early works. This, for FY21, could increase that $15 million up to a possible $60 million on McPhillamys. But we'll keep you informed on progress there. So wrapping up the call, I'd summarise by saying COVID-19 is ever-present. It's almost like the new norm. We continue to work on limiting its impacts on our business. It is a moving beast, but given our strong cash position, no debt, multiple sites, multiple camps, extensive ore stockpiles and spot-deferred hedges, I think we're in reasonably well positioned for what may lay ahead. But complacency is the risk, both for the community and our business. Work is progressing to get on top of our safety with some pleasing results, but it's just the start of where we want to be. A solid quarter on the operational front, just gone. Production for the year came in virtually on our guidance midpoint. Our full year all-in sustaining, after adjustments, came in slightly above the top end of guidance, albeit pushed a little bit by some schedule-related increases. Rosemont Underground is in production and contributing to our plans of growth now. We're ongoing building in confidence in the potential additional underground source at Duketon with Garden Well. We're making real progress on the formal approval process at McPhillamys, with work being done on our response to plan. A range of extremely encouraging results continue at Bannagow and Gloucester, while very exciting early stage exploration at Beetlejuice. Is it a while? Well, time will tell on that one, I think. Finally, guidance for the coming year sees us continuing to mine above our life of mine strip ratio, which keeps our all-in sustaining costs elevated. But at the same time, we're building a solid increase in our production levels, and more importantly, this points to our continuing rise to our 400,000 ounces from the Duketon operations. And while we creep closer, and while at the same time we continue to creep closer to that additional step change of 170 to 200,000 ounces in potential production profile that would come from McPhillamys. It's an exciting time for us here at Regis as we're on the doorstep of a potential next phase of growth cycle, and as we continue to look at increasing number of multiple internal growth opportunities. So I'll pull it up there and I'll hand it back to you, Ashley, and we're happy to take any questions that people may have.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Daniel Morgan with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jim and Tim. Question on the costs in the guidance. So costs for the quarter just gone were $1,358 an ounce. Now that's above guidance for FY21, which is $1,230 to $1,300. I'm just wondering if you could call out some key drivers as to, you know, why you think unit costs are coming down over the next 12 months versus what we've just seen this quarter.
Sure. Look, this quarter was the quarter just gone, we were down on our ounces relative to where we expect to be going forward, and that's a pretty significant driver of unit costs. You know, we are seeing a lift, so that's the first. So I'd say that's probably the primary one. The second was the strip ratio during the quarter was probably a little bit higher than what we're anticipating for the full year. So we do see that. You know, last quarter was a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a, it was a challenge for us. With the ounces down, you know, our mill tons were up. Our total material moved was up a bit, certainly relative to where we had been. And that all meant that we had a, what I'd say is probably an unusually higher quarter than what we might normally have expected, and it sort of rounded out over the year. And of course, we also had some COVID-related costs sitting in there as well, which are a number of them are one-offs. Probably the most significant one that we had in there, which ended up being a slightly bigger impact than we were anticipating. In the early stages of COVID, we went to a 4-2 roster, and we also social distanced on our flights, which meant we had to put on twice as many flights. Now, we did that, and that in that early stages meant that our costs were pretty neutral because, while we increased the number of flights we had to take because of, you know, you could only sit in every third seat or second seat, the swings were a lot further apart. However, after a period, I'm just trying to remember, I think it was probably about 2.5 months ago, I think we changed back, or 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, we changed back to a steadier roster. We didn't see the benefits. You know, we had a stable workforce. We didn't have as many people coming from interstate, and we were getting some degree of concern of fatigue. So we backed off to the shorter rosters, back to our normal rosters. But we had to retain our higher frequency flights. And during the quarter, that meant, I think, while the COVID cost over the full year was about $4.50 or $5 an ounce, during the quarter it was around $18 or $19 an ounce. And that cost, a significant chunk of that cost is just gone because we're no longer running with the higher frequency of flights, so social distancing on the planes. You know, we've instigated, along with our airlines, other controls, and we're comfortable with that. That's not to say that that might not come up again, depending on how this travels around the country. But, of course, everybody can see that, and we'll be giving guidance should that change. So I think, you know, the short answer to your question is fourth quarter had a few unusual pieces in it, just scheduling and production-wise, and we're seeing that a lot of that sort of smearing away over the full year of this year.
Okay, thank you. And a question on Rosemont Underground. So you've just declared commercial production. Just wondering if you could comment on the grade that you're seeing versus your expectations. Can you talk about, you know, dilution? And then also, what are you expecting in terms of, you know, ore and grade contribution for the next 12 months?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. As we indicated, the Rosemont Underground targeted the south area early, primarily because it was closer. That was the upside. The downside was, as you want to do with these things, you know, you target the ore body. It was at the very top. Rosemont tends to pinch and swell on a large scale, and this was, the underground is at the very top where we first came in, it was pinching. So we did see some continuity challenges. That was also related to the fact that our initial positioning, you know, spatial positioning was based on some broad-spaced RC drilling that we'd done from the surface. So in the early phase, we did We saw material was there, but it wasn't, you know, we were getting more dilution than we were hoping to get, because we realised that our development wasn't exactly located where we wanted it to be, and we were still getting into the rhythm of and the positioning of wanting to have good access drives for diamond drilling out and grade control drilling from underground, those sorts of things. What we've certainly started to see over the last few weeks is getting a better degree of confidence. The connection between our reserves and our grade control and our reconciliation in the mill is becoming much tighter. We're also over in the central zone now, and we've got some early production starting to come out of there, and even the grade control drilling is much more encouraging for us and giving us confidence that that area won't be as the learning curve isn't anywhere near as steep as it was over in the south. So, a bit long-winded, but it's a question that, you know, needs a bit of time. I think we certainly struggled in a couple of areas in the early stages while we just got our heads around how we needed to get ourselves into a cycle and get good quality grade control drilling from underground to get confidence. But we are seeing that now starting to be a lot more confident that we're getting what we're predicting. And certainly as we're heading over into the higher grade central area, that's giving us a great degree of encouragement. We're seeing some places where things might give us a little bit more than we were hoping, which is good. And, you know, it sort of certainly bodes well for when we head further north to the main where the grades are another step change higher again. So we're looking forward to some, certainly for the Rosemont Underground to be a bit more consistent in our production profile, and hopefully even might get a few wins, additional wins out of it, but we'll keep our powder dry on that one for the moment.
And just the ore expectations you're going to pull out from that underground in rough terms?
Oh, look, we've always said underground will probably produce at around about 500,000 tonnes per annum, maybe a little bit more, 500,000 to 600,000 per annum from here.
So what? Yeah, okay.
40 to 50,000 tonnes a month, really, that order. But because the mine is still relatively small, it tends to go in spits and spurts, but it's becoming a bit more consistent now.
Thank you. And the growth capital includes expansion to the camp. What's the requirement for this here?
Look, that's a good pick up there. I wondered if anyone would notice that. That's probably a reflection of our early stage position on Garden Well. We haven't. That's in our guidance. It's in our budget. It's not due for expenditure for a while yet, so we're certainly sitting on top of that and won't approve it until we need to. But I guess it's a bit of a reflection of how confident we are in getting a pleasant story out of the Garden Well PFS.
Okay, thank you very much. And last question. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess I'd just add to that we're also very cautious of development by stealth strategies, whereby, you know, before you know it, half the thing's built before it's even been approved, and we're very conscious of, you know, we won't be entering into that phase. It's just the camp tends to be the longest lead item here, and that's why we've sort of sequenced that one already.
Thank you. And last question, just McPhillamys, so progressing through approvals and getting nearer, and I guess a little bit more confidence, it sounds like, that this is progressing. Just wondering when you might update us on, CapEx and OpEx and feasibility study numbers?
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a tricky one because there are a few things that are a bunch of moving parts that revolve around our reply to submissions. You know, there's been, and the reason for this is that when we went out with our EIS, we had a number of submissions coming from and questions and queries from the public and from the regulators, and as we've looked through that, we've realised that there's some things that we can do to optimise the design and maybe, you know, reduce noise, reduce various emissions, change the visual aspects of it, things like that. As a result, we've just got to hold off on finalising those numbers. I'd anticipate that later on this year we'll certainly, hopefully we'll be in a position to give some better guidance or updated guidance. I mean, for now, we're still pretty consistent. Life hasn't changed for us. I think we've said the CapEx for the plant and associated infrastructure, the original pre-fees was $215 million plus or minus 30%, which put the top end at around 270 mil. And we're saying that the capital range for the new project will certainly be above that, with the bottom end of the range taking in the top end of the old range. So, you know, i.e. it's got a solid three in front of it. So that's where it sits at the moment, and as we sort of land closer to the detail and we can the confidence, and that confidence hinges off our progressing through this approval process, we'll keep the market up to date.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Nick Herbert with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, gents. Start on Garden World. Do you mind just talking through the conceptual timing beyond that PFS, and also what scale is being considered in that PFS?
Yeah, look, obviously the scale is something that it's part of what we're looking at the PFS. But I've said, you know, in the past around this, given the scale of these types of deposits, I think, you know, a nominal 500,000 tonnes per annum type arrangement out of them is, you know, not too dissimilar to what we get out of Rosemont, both in terms of potential initial setup, you know, at this very early stage, if I was waving my arms around. The timing-wise, look, if we get a PFS, as we're anticipating, sometime in the December quarter, yeah, we'd be looking to make a decision as quickly as we can. Probably the one of the early factors in the timing of Garden Well was how soon the benching in the pit got to a place where the portal was going to be. But as part of this update, we're looking at coming in off some of the higher benches that have already or are just about to be mined. So that means that we've got the potential to come in a little earlier. You know, conceivably, we could kick off mining sometime early next year, but in the same vein as Rosemont, you're probably talking about, I can't remember, I think it was about 9 months or so before we started seeing any dribble of ounces coming out. Now, I'm just doing that off, you know, drawing a bead off how Rosemont performed. But yeah, look, if we get the PFS done and we're happy with it at the end of this year in December quarter, then there'd be nothing stopping us potentially from pulling the trigger early next year.
Great. So there's no additional permitting or anything required for that one?
Oh, it'll need approvals, but, you know, it's not as if we've got to build a whole new tailings dam or it involves moving an area that's sensitive. It's all underground, so it's a lot more straightforward. But you still have to get approvals for a new mine.
Okay, great. And then just a couple on guidance to help us out with the modelling next year, if possible. Are you able to split out the production and cost guidance between north and south, and then just also touch on strip ratios, please?
Yeah, look, we don't split the guidance out across our operations. That is certainly not at this point. Although I would highlight that or note that going forward we plan to provide a little bit more detail on that front than we have done in the past, splitting it up across the businesses. In terms of the strip ratio, I think we identified this time last year in our overall guidance when we talked about this growth profile to 400, that the year just gone and this coming year will both be strip ratios that are above life of mine average. There's a little bit of catch up we had to do last year, and we'll continue to do that this year. I think our strip ratio is circa a bit over 6, something like that for the year, and our life of mine average is sitting slightly under 4. So, you know, this coming year is another high strip period, but after that, obviously, under our current life of mine plans, that starts to drop away pretty quickly, which really sees the all-in sustaining cost drop off. Because, you know, the plain facts of the matter are you can work on the edges of open cut mining in your unit cost, cost per ton move, but in the end, the thing that really drives your unit costs are, number one, your grade, and number two, your strip ratio, certainly in an open pit sense. So we see this year being another elevated above life of mine average year, and then that'll start to drop off, which is really the key driver of our keeping our all-in sustaining where it is.
Yep, got it. Thanks very much, Jim.
No,
your next question comes from Matthew Frydman with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure, thanks. Morning, Jim and team. A couple of questions. Just firstly, on the quarter from Moolart Well, you touched on the grade there. Can you just go into a bit of more detail on the mechanics there, in terms of exactly what the impact of changing over the contractors was? Did that result in, I guess, some higher grade pits falling behind in terms of ore transport or movement? You know, which pits were they? And I guess the extension of that is, can we expect to see a bounce back in terms of grade in the early part of this financial year, once those rates pick up again?
Yeah, look, there's a real mixed bag in there, but the short, to sort of rewind back, first of all, there was a couple of things actually. The quarter's results, and you might see that the prior quarter was actually some pretty good grades coming through from Moolart, and that was while the business went about subtly adjusting from one quarter to the next, the grades fed to the different mills, because we had that major outage at the south. So we did a little bit of moving around of the grade and pulled some of the grade into the March quarter, basically out of the June quarter. So that was part of what was happening, because if you have a look, you'll see the prior quarter was elevated relative to the one just gone. So that was part. The second part was, we transition from, and these are haulage contractors, so we have a company that does the mining of the pits, waste movement and ore movement, and in particular at Moolart, those pits are quite remote from our mills, so we need to use a separate haulage contractor to haul in the material so that it can be processed through the mill, and that's done by these, you know, long road train looking pieces of kit. The previous contractor that was in there had been struggling for a while. Pardon me. You don't run out of ore, but it means that, you know, some of your remote areas, you can't quite keep the grade up that you were planning to. So we made a decision to consolidate out, because we had two separate haulage contractors on site, one a different one down at south than the north. We decided to consolidate that to make management easier, and the other company was a little bit more consistent. So just through that transition, you know, you like to think that you've got it all smoothly, but every now and again these snakes jump out of the wood pile and slow you down a bit. So that did have an impact on us being able to get the grade at the right feed that we really wanted to. Has some of that slid and roll into this year? A little bit of it has, and that's reflected in our guidance. Look, I don't really want to go into the detail of any one of the 7 or 8 pits that we're running all around the place across our site. I think the risk is that we disappear into a vacuum of detail and miss the big picture. But look, in summary, that particular issue is now we've moved on from it. We're quite happy with our new contract, or the contractor that's now performing the activity in that part of the world. It did have an impact on us. We've just had to wear it and move on, and I think in the longer term we'll be very pleased with the change that we made, and any adjustments and any catch up that we're going to get on that grade that was left on the ground has flown through into this year's guidance. Although I wouldn't say there's a huge number of ounces there. You know, if you look at it, we're not talking, you know, tens of thousands of ounces in this.
Yeah, I understand. Thanks for the detail there, Jim. Secondly, on McPhillamys, the response to submissions, you know, clearly when that process started, I think you were given, you know, a fairly short expectation in terms of turnaround time there. So you guys took the decision to push that out to the middle of this year. Just wondering if you can, I guess, give us a sense of what is taking the time here in formulating that response to the submissions. I know there's a great number that you guys need to respond to. And also, you touched on some of those kinds of changes in the thinking or, you know, modifications around the edges that you're making to improve the project. Just wondering if that's what's consuming, you know, most of the team's time and whether any of those changes will trigger any kind of, more detailed changes to the EIS documents themselves, you know, how you think about that process.
Yeah. Okay. So there are a number, as I said, there's a number of changes that we've wanted to make, and as we go through the response to submissions, any changes and variations that we make from the original EIS, we have to do it to effectively to EIS quality submission. This may not be strictly correct, and you know, some of the guys and girls in the details might tell me that I've got, you know, berate me for this, but in the simplest form, as we reply, there's two things that occur. We answer people's questions, and if we haven't got the answers to those questions, we do a bit more work so that we can answer them, and that work takes a little bit of time. Sometimes it's just a quick review of raw data. Sometimes it might be a little bit more testing that we want to do to give people the necessary comfort and ask for confidence. And other things, as I mentioned, it might be a change in the layout, there might be an access road to the site that we want to relocate, and that takes a little bit of time and money as we go and re-engineer all of that. The one thing that you want to make sure that you're doing is when you provide your reply to submission, you want to make sure that you're absolutely putting your best foot forward. It's not to say that you don't get another bite at the cherry, but you know, if you want this thing to run on the best possible time frame, you're better off to spend just a little bit more time getting your response to submissions right or as good as you can make it, rather than sort of submitting it a month early on a bit of a wing and a prayer, and then find out that you've actually got to go back and then the whole thing just gets delayed by several months. So we've been making those judgments. COVID, while it hasn't caused a major disruption, it does cause delays. And when you're sort of working over, you know, a three or a 4 month program, a delay of 2 or 3 weeks because, you know, people can't get out, they can't travel to the site, or they can't go out into the field to collect the data, or they can't get to the lab, or it's just hard, or you know, it's just a little bit harder keeping everybody aligned. Those things do tend to have a bit of an impact, but you know, I think that you know, basically what the thing that's really the focus and the message that I've given the team is for the want of a couple of weeks of getting in an earlier submission, hold back and make sure we get it right, and make sure we've considered and we've accommodated the things that we believe or we know we need to consider. So, you know, that's what's driving us on that front.
Yeah, makes sense. Thanks. Just finally, quickly, the Risdon Well ground and the Betelgeuse prospect. Can you remind me, is that ground that you guys picked up as part of the Duketon acquisition? And I guess just further on that, of the, you know, the $35 million you guys are planning to spend on exploration next year, just how much of that is kind of targeting that, you know, that kind of, those new tenements that you've picked up in that acquisition? Thanks.
Yes, it certainly is in the new ground that we picked up. If you have a look at, in our release, I think it's figure six. I can't remember what the figure number is. Hang on a minute. Figure six. It is the, there's a red mark there. It's to the sort of northwest of Rosemont Mill or Risdon Well. And you can see a bit of the line of drilling that sits above it. That's what we've titled as Beetlejuice. And it is on the new ground that we bought, just under a year ago. Which is, I think reflective of just, you know, how our team have been able to turn their efforts to taking our knowledge and our IP, as they call it, from the ground that we've held for years and turned it onto this newer area that we've picked up. What proportion of the 34 million is on the new ground? I think, to be honest, I'd be guessing, but I would hazard to say maybe half, something like that. If that. Don't quote me on that, because what tends to happen is the more high level greenfields exploration tends to be relatively low cost in the early stages. It's not till you get into the, you know, the drilling under Gloucester and Garden Well and Rosemont Deeps and that sort of diamond drilling that the costs start to step up. But I'd be estimating it to say, you know, circa at least half. At least.
That's interesting. Yeah, thanks very much for that, Jim.
Your next question comes from Kate McCutcheon with Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jim and team. Thanks for the call. Just moving forward, are we going to get clarity on Rosemont underground costs, or will they be grouped into Dukes and South, and is that how you're looking to report it moving forward as one?
No, as I mentioned before, we'll start to now separate out at this stage our three operations. So we will identify Moolart, Garden Well and Rosemont separately, with a bit more granularity there, and within that there'll be sufficient information to be able to identify what is being contributed from open pit and what is being contributed from underground.
Okay, got it. And just remind me again, when do we get to that main zone at Rosemont Underground?
Look, that will be late this year and into next year.
Okay, that makes
which
sense.
Still, you can see, let me see. So if you have a look at figure, the Rosemont Underground figure, which I think is figure three, figure one, you can see the green and the red. The green development on that figure one is what we've done up to the prior quarter. The green, the red is what we did during the prior quarter. The main zone is that area over to the right of the ramp. And, you know, we're not going to be there in the next couple of months, but we'll certainly start to be heading there and touching it over later on this year. But primary production will come from South and Central this year.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then just finally, I guess, as McPhillamy's CapEx commitments kind of come a bit closer, have you thought about kind of your funding preferences there for that? I mean, you're obviously sitting on a fair bit of cash, but interested in your thoughts around that?
Yeah, we're just working on that at the moment. You know, obviously we've got a number of options. We can consider debt, we can consider bonds, we could consider equity, and all of that is being thrown into the mix as to what we think might be the best. You know, if the gold price stays where it is, we've got pretty good cash generation alone. But yeah, we're certainly looking at those. We don't have a clear preferred specific one at the moment. Suffice to say that we have options in front of us, and also suffice to say that there is no shortage of people knocking on our doors wanting to talk to us about it. You know, they can see we've got an excellent base of our business and a fantastic project to boot that, you know, so plenty of people coming forward. So I think we'll have lots of options on that front and competitive.
Okay, got it. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Kate.
Your next question comes from Levi Spry with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
G'day, Jim. Thanks for the call, mate. Thanks for those numbers on the strip ratio. So just confirming, are we expecting a reserve and resource update soon? And I guess the guidance is sort of, are there any big moving parts that we should be focused on? Guidance must be focused, must be based on that pending announcement, is it?
Okay. The question was, what's the timing on the resource and reserve statements? Yeah, that's not too far away, probably in the next handful of weeks.
Yep.
We've got our full-year accounts, which will be released in... Oh, we haven't got a date, but it's probably going to be this time at the end of August. So I'd expect that between now and then our resource and reserves go out. I've made no secret of the fact that historically we've been pretty good at replacing resource and reserves, but our pipeline of new mineral inventory converted into resources hasn't been fantastic, and that things have become very skinny. I think last year was the really scraping the bottom of the barrel of converting resource to reserve. So, and this year is going to be very, very, very light on in terms of resource reserve replacement. In fact, I think that's unless we make some significant change to our modifying factors, i.e. our gold price assumptions, which we're not intending to do at the moment. So we are now in what I would view as being the flat space of a bit of history catching up with us, but nonetheless, we've started spending money and we can see a clear path beyond this next report where we'll be able to start adding material back in, but this one's probably not going to be particularly exciting.
Yeah, thanks. I was getting at the price and whether those strips were on a different price or not. So thanks for that. And
we are looking at some of those longer term options of, can we lock in some of the material that's never been in our resources but sitting right out on the edge of our never been in our reserves but have been right out on the edges of our resources. But we're kind of talking some pretty significant $2,000+ per ounce assumptions in that space. So a little bit of thought and planning needs to go into that yet.
Yep, thank you. And the hedge book. I get asked about this a lot. One scenario is that McPhillam East goes ahead and you can basically amortize, more reserves, amortize over more reserves and push out the volume limit. So can you just step me through the strategy behind doubling the amount that you sold in this quarter and how we should think about that over the next, 24 months?
Yeah, look, I think certainly we have, and I think you can see in the past releases, we've got a volume schedule that we're working to. And so we continue to work to that schedule. So, that in part, you can see the logic of why we've changed what we've changed and stepped it up. But you're absolutely on the money. The number one thing that would put a whole new perspective on that will be the approval of McPhillam. So that will be one significant catalyst. And another, of course, is as we continue to bring on new reserves and new opportunity, new life at Duketon itself, which is also what we're working on over the next year or so. So there are two of the big things that might change that volume strategy. The other part is, we've looked at it and can see that we can undertake some of that. We may look at what we're doing with our capital requirements and whether we can speed it up or slow it down. There's a number of things, as I mentioned, there's a we're heading into a phase where we've got to consider not just our cash flow generating capability, but you know, we've got McPhillamys coming up, which is a pretty significant spend. How do we fund it? What are the implications for dividends? There's a whole series of things that sort of rotate around this decision of capital management and our hedge book management.
Mm-hmm. But you have doubled it, so is that a good run rate going forward?
Yeah, look, I think we have doubled it. That's certainly where we're thinking at the moment. There's nothing to, you know, it still means that we generate some reasonable cash flow. You know, you saw we still had a pretty good, an excellent quarter last quarter of $40 million, which, you know, when we look at some of our cash generating capacity relative to some of our compatriots, it's not too bad despite the significantly lower production profile that we have. So, you know, the plan is we'll keep following this updated plan, but the plan is also that we will continue to monitor that and see whether we modify it. But for now, it's what it is.
Yep, got it. Thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Okay, Levi.
Your next question comes from David Coates with Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks again for the call. Yeah, a couple of my questions have been picked up on there. Hedging this one for sure. Just winding back to Rosemont, Kate asked a question about getting into Rosemont Central. You've popped in the quarterly there, the average grade is 2.9 grams. Is that reserve grade or kind of what you've got out of there so far? Because obviously, you know, looks like it's mostly development dirt so far. And it compares with your reserve grade, I think, of between 6 and 7 grams. So look, as you guys start to presumably increase the production volumes out of the south zone, you know, should we be seeing that grade come up, or is the high grade really sort of concentrated over in the central zone? That's my first question.
Yeah, I think the grade that 6 or 7 was the early stage resources that we were quoting on that. So obviously there's some modifying factors on that, but notwithstanding that grade that is mentioned in the quarterly is only the grade of the southern area. It's not the grade of the other areas. So as you go north, the grade gets significantly improves. So we will see that 2.9 is the average for south across both the stopes and the development. So we're seeing it, but we haven't averaged that because, as you pointed out, as you noted, a lot of our tons in the look-back period has been coming from development, proportionally more than will come in future. The central area sees a step up to whatever 20% is, 3.5 grams a ton. And then as we head over to the main, there's another step up again, and I think that's 5 or 6. Is our view on that at the moment. So yes, it definitely improves. 2.9 is not the average across the whole of the underground, and that's why these costs that we're seeing coming through from Rosemont Underground will just improve with time now because we get the benefit of the more productive and lower cost bench stope tons, and we also get the benefit of the higher grade over the coming next couple of years.
Okay. Cheers, Jim. And on the organic stuff, you know, some good prospects emerging. Now, how are you guys prioritising your exploration at Duketon as these targets are emerging?
Yeah, good question. Well, we don't use darts on a wall, we've got a series of gates, and you know, we've got some pretty sitting in the background, we've got a few got to be careful how I frame this in this period of woke, but more very experienced and many years of experience people with grey hair sitting in the background, looking at everything from structure to overlying material, aeromag surveys, all of the high level information which is targeting, it helps us to identify potential zones. We then go in and do, you know, we've basically that ground that we picked up last year, it had exploration on it, but it really wasn't structured in a manner that was approaching it from the way that we have done, or leveraging off the experience and the success that we, Regis, have had on the tenements that we currently hold. So we've been taking that, everything from regional structural knowledge, overlying lithology, you know, various non-intrusive data collection methods, and that helps us to identify the preliminary targets. Once you've done that, you're back into the realms of having to drive around, get soil samples, you know, tens of thousands of soil samples, looking for the anomalies, not just for gold, but for other trace elements. Sometimes it's not the gold that's going to be there. It might be, you know, might be zinc. Could be a vector, they call it, that tells you that you're in the close proximity. You know, it's interesting. We know, for example, at Garden Well, which was covered, the deposit that was discovered, it was fully covered. But we understand the telltales around the geology that tells us that it's there. So we're using that sort of information to help. We gather the soil samples, we identify where we think the targets might be, we then go and air core, which is cheap and fast, and doesn't go down very far, but it tells you what's basically down to over, you drill through the softer overburden oxide and get to the base of the hard rock, and that is, you get samples on the way through and you get samples at the top of the hard rock, and all of that starts to combine to tell you where you're going to be fortunate and find something, and where you might not be. So we use multiple prioritisation approaches, and we actually have a grading system that, you know, you end up with a whole series of different factors that are considered, and it ranks, you know, over, I think, you know, just over a qualitative and quantitative ranking system that we've been developing over the years.
Okay, and would you hazard to share with us perhaps your top three at the moment, or ones you think might be dominating news flow over the next 6 months?
Well, I'm hoping the Betelgeuse will. The rest of them will keep our powder dry. You know, Betelgeuse is a really interesting one. You know, this is really early state. You know, there's nothing there to indicate. This was one that really flowed from the ground that we knew we really wanted to get our hands on. We've gone and soil sampled it. We've gone and air cored it, and it's coming up, it's starting to come up trumps. You know, you've got to be careful about how far you go with this, but this is an anomaly over a 5 kilometre strike length where we've got higher than 0.1 gram per tonne. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but sitting within that is what appears to be a 3 kilometre strike along strike zone where it's above half a gram per tonne of dirt. And this is just in the material, in the drilling that we've picked up with air core. You know, this is not going to be a surface expression. This is going to be undercover. We've done some diamond. We've just put in a you know, we've advanced this by putting in an early stage diamond drill hole, which we're just getting the core on now. And we've also got an accelerated reverse RC program that'll kick off probably in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. So we're not putting all our eggs into this basket, but we're certainly starting to push it along to make sure that we find out sooner rather than later just how this thing is starting to shape up. And that's the priority at the moment in this sort of greenfield space.
No, that sounds great. Thanks very much, Jim. Cheers.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. We will now pause a short moment to allow questioners to enter the queue. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Beyer for any closing remarks.
Thanks, Ashley. And we'll just wrap it up there. Thanks again, everybody. I guess our message is it's been quite a solid year that's just gone. We've got a year of growth, certainly on the production front ahead of us. But more than that, we've got some real growth projects that we're starting to kick into that will add to our future production beyond just the next year, both on site at Duketon and of the Philomys. So thanks again for joining us, and have a nice day.